Autumn leaves paint the trees like flaming auburn hair into the wood so dark and deep. Much braver men have feared. Do I carry on?
I'm Dimae Roberts, stage and studio. We're listening to a song from Imago Theater's mega production of their show La Belle, Lost in the World of the Automaton. It was a live performance by Justine Davis, who stars in the show. In 2016, I featured and presented 52 weekly shows with more than 100 performing artists, writers, filmmakers, and groups. Today we're going to hear some fun, moving, and inspiring highlights from this year's stage and studio shows. And it's a bittersweet time for me personally because we're saying goodbye to longtime cable engineer Janet Anderson, who has mixed my shows live since almost the time I started doing stage and studio. This is her last show with me. It's such a sad time, so bittersweet. And I've presented her with the greatest live mix challenge today. That's her challenge as we listen to the cuts I've selected for today's show. We'll talk to Janet a little bit at the end of the show, too. So stay tuned for a special stage and studio.
Draws me ever near. What sort of a magic friend or foe waits for me?
I'm Dimae Roberts. So much happens in a year. Portland has an undeniably vibrant arts community. There are just too many events and performances that I, as the host and producer of Stage and Studio, can cover. But it's always a treat to talk with smart and talented and interesting people. I'm going to feature only a few of the artists I got to know better as a result of this weekly show. Now, I'm going to start off with a stage play. It always begins with the playwright. And I got a chance to talk with playwright Mia Chung, whose play You For Me For You was produced at Portland Playhouse in February. After reading her play, I asked her to read the exquisite stage direction she wrote. You know, most often the audience never gets to hear the stage directions, and I found this passage truly poetic.
The orchestra swells with the unmistakable sounds of Rice. As the music builds, a Rice musician, both performer and conductor in one, points at a metal pot. It is a superlative, mystifying, gorgeous pot, so much so that you just might believe that it can fly, sing, and offer advice, in addition to fulfilling its primary role of cooking rice. The rice musician says, "Now, it's time. Now, now, now." The metal pot is stubbornly inanimate. The rice musician slumps with missed musical climax. The rice orchestra falls politely silent for a moment, then disperse into loose pockets of practice and rice tuning. The rice musician attends to the metal pot, gently encouraging in a discreet undertone. The metal pot emits a loud, steamy salute. Minnie jumps, knocking over a large sack. Rice spills everywhere.
Mia Chung reading from her play, You For Me For You. Also in February, veteran Shakespeare actor Tobias Anderson and director Rusty Newton-Tennant dropped by to talk about Post Five Theater's production of King Lear. Anderson had long wanted to play that title role. And this clip shows how actors and a director can be of like minds, almost finishing each other's sentences as they discuss Shakespeare's work.
Poor naked wretches, wheresoe'er you are, that bide the pelting of this pitiless storm, how shall your houseless heads and unfed sides, your looped and windowed raggedness, defend us from seasons such as these? Oh, I have taken too little care of this.
Which section is that from?
What is that? I just do the play.
No,
act three, I think.
Yeah, he's about to go into the hovel. They've been running through the storm, yeah. And they finally have gotten to a point where they might find some shelter in this little hovel where they're about to run into Edgar, poor Tom. And Lear takes this one moment where he sends the fool and Kent into the hovel and says, "I just need a moment to pray." And it's so amazing because in so many ways, this piece seems to be an homage to the homeless. Because here we have a king who becomes, in essence, a beggar. And I think of Shakespeare in his day. he was probably the middleman between the king and the beggar. He probably would see the king in his performances and then turn around that night and end up in the bar with the beggar. And to be able to connect those two worlds was probably what he, or, you know, at least in my imagination, is what he really wanted to do with this play, is to illustrate for all of us, we are one mistake away from losing everything and becoming a beggar.
That was actor Tobias Anderson and director Rusty Newton-Tennant talking about Post Five Theater's King Lear. In March, I featured actor and writer Lauren Weedman and her new book, Misfortune. I was struck by how vulnerable she made herself when writing about her life, especially about her own insecurities.
I basically was getting a tattoo that was supposed to mean trust your instinct and always remind myself, because I felt like I got the lesson. I'm like, I really get it. This thing happened where I felt I had a breakthrough. And then when I go to get the tattoo artist walks out and she's shaking. Like when she reaches out to shake my hand.
There's a lot of red flags.
And as soon as I saw that, there's tons. Yeah. And every single time I was like, I should turn around and walk out, but I didn't want to hurt anyone's feeling.
And I can relate to that too.
Well, over the top, isn't it? It's like right to the point where I'm like, okay, there's blood oozing out of the walls. Maybe I should go. You know, there's like Satan's voice going, get out. And I'm still like, well, you know, I did make an appointment. I don't want them to think I'm leaving, you know, because I'm judging them. Like, and then I end up getting, I still have the tattoo, which.
Oh, can I see it?
Yeah. When people say get it covered up, I'm like, but it really does mean trust your instinct, because it's such an awful.
It's not as bad as I thought it would be from your description.
Oh, really? Yeah. I think I got to play it up a bit. You see, I'm already.
But I understand. But it wasn't what you wanted. And so it's a reminder. Is it a reminder to you to trust your instinct from now on?
Yeah, well.
Because of this.
Sure.
On
that's
my
what,
wrist.
That, right, when people say get it covered up, I'm like, but it actually became trust your instinct. It became the best symbol of trust your instinct ever. But it hasn't helped. I'm sorry to say, Demi. I still, when I look down, I think trust your instinct, and I'll still have a second milkshake. I mean that sort of metaphorically.
Actor and writer Lauren Weedman telling a story about a section in her book, Misfortune. Weedman will be telling more stories in her upcoming new show, Lauren Weedman Doesn't Live Here Anymore, at Portland Center Stage in March 2017. You know, often I get to visit with people I haven't seen in a long while, particularly those I worked with as a theater actor. Bunny Rivera, featured in Milagro Theater's Into the Beautiful North, reminded me of the early days of Milagro when it was Miracle Theater and it was part of the Greek Festival. My first play as an actor in Portland was Miracle Theater's Electra.
When we started with this idea, they were doing the Greek Theater and they did a couple of other pieces that had nothing to do with Latino themes. And they put in a newspaper article that my mother said, look, you always wanted to act, go do this. And I auditioned, and Jose immediately handed me a broom. And what? That's how I got started.
You have to work your way up.
I had to. And actually, when you did Electra, I was...
You're stage managing,
right? I was stage managing, and I had no idea what I was doing. And that's how I got started. I credit Milagro with getting me started. Did many plays. My children were actively involved. They were running lights and sound back then. Mm-hmm. If you can imagine having 13, 14-year-olds, you know, running lights and running the sounds. And they had...
It was a family affair.
It was definitely a family affair. In fact, I was on the board.
Right.
So I was able to see that start up, and I'm amazed at how far it's grown.
That was actress Bunny Rivera with Daniel Juarez, who was her co-director, featured in Milagro Theater's Into the Beautiful North. You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Demi Roberts, and I'm reviewing 2016, and featuring some of the highlights from artists that I've talked with this year. If you missed any of the show, you can hear it again at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. I really enjoy having performers sing live on the show. This one presented a mixing challenge to engineer Janet Anderson, though, during our April membership drive here at KBOO. Here are singers Sean Mathey and John Moore from Portland Opera's The Magic Flute.
I'm happy to sing a little bit of the beginning aria that I do. It gives you a little indication, maybe the first verse gives you an indication of... what Papageno is up to. Give myself a note.
Oh,
here.
Wow. You have your compositions on your phone right now.
I tell you what.
Awesome.
Oh, catching birds, that is my trade. I spend my life in grove and glade and young, and all throughout this land are always glad to shake my hand. For lovely birds my snares I set, I pipe them down within my net. My life is cheerful, gay, and free, for all the birds belong to me.
You're awesome. You even whistle.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's something that that Papageno has panpipes, and that's the way he calls to his birds. And throughout the show, we have sort of a flute off and a panpipes off. That's how we sort of locate each other when we're in the
and
temple.
And who wins?
The flute always. It's magic. The flute.
Yeah, it is magical, isn't it?
They are.
That was John Moore singing from Portland Opera's The Magic Flute, and also with him was Sean Mathey in the production. Now, it can be difficult to recreate your dramatic performance as a radio monologue when you're on stage in studio. Paige Rogers accomplished it well when she performed a piece about the wife of a man who shot young girls at an Amish school. This performance is from the Amish Project, directed by Beth Harper, founder of the Portland Actors Conservatory.
My boys seem kind of numb. Sometimes I think they're the ones who are dead. They move around the house so quiet, sort of half-lit. The way they sit at the table, slumped over, spooning their cereal. Little ghost. And then suddenly I'm painfully aware of how alive they are. I can see the veins beneath their skin, picture their little lungs, their little hearts pumping blood, oxygen, every moment inside their little chest right across the table. They only trust each other now. They don't dare cling to me the way they used to. Maybe I'm the ghost. I keep my expectations low, that they sit and eat their cereal at the table. That's enough. That somehow I managed to put two bowls, two spoons, a box of Frosted Flakes, that's Joshy's favorite, a box of Cocoa Puffs, that's Jeremy's favorite, on the table with milk. And they sit and eat it, and somehow get out the door for the carpool for the sitters is a miracle to me, a total miracle. That's a laugh. I'm talking of miracles. You want to hear a miracle? I still love my husband, and I miss him.
Paige Rogers from Portland Actors Conservatory's The Amish Project. Quite often, interviews get personal, and artists reveal how deeply they're connected with the work they do. In May, Chris Coleman, artistic director of Portland Center Stage, reflected on his Southern roots and how much he related to Tennessee Williams' A Streetcar Named Desire, which he directed as a mostly African-American production.
You know, I'm a Southern man.
That's right.
You know, grew up in Atlanta. My family got to Georgia in 1805. I probably rejected that whole part of my history because I always felt like if you were a Southerner in America, you were viewed as second rate. So part of my quest to go to, you know, famous schools was to kind of overcome that hurdle, if you will. And I didn't have much interest when I started out directing in doing plays about Southern people. I was doing Brecht and Shakespeare and Shaw. You know, my mom passed in September, and
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
That's a big passage.
It is a big passage, and she struggled with some issues that really debilitated her mental capacities in the last couple of years. And you start to get, you become more curious about the human mind, the human spirit, what holds us together, what allows us to survive, what pulls us apart. And working on this play feels really close to me right now, because trying to understand the psychology of someone like a Blanche who has experienced so much trauma and not been able to digest it is really heartbreaking and fascinating to try to tell the truth about.
Chris Coleman, artistic director of Portland Center Stage, talking about A Streetcar Named Desire. One of the amazing weekend events that happens in Portland in May is the Vanport Mosaic Festival, produced by Damaris Webb, Esprine Mitchell, and Laura Laforte. The whole weekend of performances and documentary presentations commemorates the devastating flood that occurred at Vanport in 1948. It wiped out a large African-American community at the time. In this video clip, Laforte filmed Vanport survivor Mrs. Marge Moss.
We don't want to forget Vanport, not us survivors. This project is very important. It tells the true history because the people that lived it are the ones that are telling their story. Being on camera and telling my story, I feel very proud. And I am thankful that I am still here where I can tell my story. I want to leave my mark.
Vanport survivor Mrs. March Moss from La Ura La Forte for the Vanport Mosaic Festival. I'm Demay Roberts, stage and studio. And if you can't tell right now, this is a live show. And I'm presenting a live mix challenge to longtime KBOO engineer Janet Anderson, who says goodbye today from the show. We're reviewing some of the interviews from artists this year. And if you missed any of the show, you can hear it again at stageandstudio.org or kboo.fm/stageandstudio. In June of this year, I featured a special show on safety for women in theater with Age and Gender Equity's Jane Vogel and fight choreographer Kristen Munn, who was offering free theater safety courses for women. It was a response to an article about a 20-year history of physical assault at a theater company in Chicago. Kristen Munn spoke about how Portland Theater can make a safer work environment for its own artists.
As a stage manager, I already have that education because I am a fight choreographer, you know, but like just knowing how like to move physically, knowing how to do it safely, knowing that there's other options, I think is so important, you know, but like keeping each other safe. What I'm hoping is that like we'll just if we can just spread the knowledge of like how to keep each other safe, setting policies, doing things like that, having a standard for our theater in Portland, you know, then that way we can watch each other's backs is what I'm hoping.
Fight choreographer Kristen Munn. In September, I talked with Tim Dang, the former artistic director of East West Players, who was fundamental in getting Oregon Shakespeare Festival to host the National Asian American Theater Festival and Conference there in October. Tim Dang has been on the forefront of getting theaters to adopt more diversity as we look ahead to the next generation.
We at East West Players had launched an initiative called 2042 Sea Change. 2042 is the date that the U.S. Census has titled when America becomes majority minority, when it's a tipping point where the population of the United States will be majority minority, hence 51%. And what this initiative wanted to encourage was to really challenge theaters in terms of their development of new stories, their casting of more people of color, casting women roles, as well as encouraging more youth and stories and experiences about youth under the age of 35. And the idea was to think about it now so that in 20 years, 25 years, as we get closer to 2042, that there will be this celebration of new stories, and starting it now is the time.
Tim Dang, the former artistic director of East West Players, talking to me via Skype. Also in September, guest host James Dixon talked with Vin Chambry and E.M. Lewis about her play The Gun Show at Coho Productions. Vin Chambry talked openly about keeping actors of color in Portland.
Cultivating men of color, people of color, we're here. We've always been here. Mm-hmm. And the goal is to understand that there are young people here that are listening to us. And I mean, I think that maybe it's taken me being a father to learn this, that people do listen to you and your words mean something. And mm-hmm. But also, like, do you have the same values, and you know, do you lead by that? And I just think that Portland is a beautiful place, and being from here and you know, seeing the ever-changing Portland of hipsters and keep Portland weird. And we've always been weird. I mean, come on now. But, you know, it's my duty to stay here. And we can go to New York. I've been there, done that, you know. Right. But the thing is I have to stay here.
That was Vin Chambry talking with James Dixon about The Gun Show from E.M. Lewis. In October, I talked with Samantha Vandermeerva, artistic director of Shaking the Tree Theater, about her combination of fairy tale and Greek mythology that she originated for her show Head, hands, feet. She shared part of her process of creating new work, and that is fear.
And I had that moment of terror. You know, I'd wake up every morning at about 4. It happens in the throngs of terror, of like, what are we going to do? I don't know if these story, if we're saying anything valuable, but somehow you find your way and you do a lot of listening and you find some kind of truth, and then the terror subsides. Well, the terror then turns into everyone's going to hate it. They're going to think I'm stupid. I have nothing to say. So we got over that terror as well. And then you just let it go. And then you have to let it go. I mean, it's the craziest thing that we do in the world. But if it doesn't scare you, yeah, I don't think it's worth it.
Samantha Vandermeerva, Artistic Director of Shaking the Tree Theater. When you're in the middle of a rehearsal, often world events affect your production. Actor John San Nicolas of Artist Repertory Theater's A Civil War Christmas tells us about a discussion during rehearsal right after the presidential election.
Even before the election, we had to basically stop. Rehearsals had to freeze so that we could stop and talk about how personally we felt about this story, about the Civil War, and also about how personally we feel about the world today and how we could fit them together. Because I don't think any of us really personally connected with the script that much in the beginning, because it was kind of, one of the beauties of it is that it's kind of open and generic and really needs the cast and directorial crew to bring their personal touch to it. And so there just had to be long, difficult conversations about that, and race is involved. And, you know, none of us expected there to be such a divide in America. But I think when we had those conversations, especially after the election, there were some people who expected that. And I think that was pretty clearly drawn along racial lines.
That was actor John San Nicolas of Artist Repertory Theater's A Civil War Christmas. As I've mentioned before, I love it when guests sing live on the show, especially without any accompaniment. Here, Laureen Coco Jackson dropped by with Jerry Foster from Passon Art Theater's Black Nativity, which features gospel singing.
Sweet little holy child, didn't know who you was, didn't know who you was.
That was Laureen Coco Jackson singing beautifully from Passon Art Theater's Black Nativity. For my final cut, I want to play a song Jim Vadala played from La Belle, Lost in the World of the Automaton. That show runs through January 8th at Imago Theater. And here, Vadala plays the ukulele and sings about being a stoker on a steamship.
Black Rock is my whole life. Sam Stoker is my name. I'm filthy by first sunlight, my only friend's this flame. I wish I was a captain, 'cause stoking makes me sad. But stoker was the only job they had.
What a sweet moment here on stage and studio. That was Jim Vadala from Imago Theater's La Belle. So many moments to choose from, especially over the last 19 years. Many of those shows were engineered by Janet Anderson. This is her last day, and it's so bittersweet for me. Janet, I
yes.
want to bring you on the air right now.
I'm always here. I'm just quiet.
You are. It's like we have this...
this, you know, mental telepathy here where I don't even have to do anything and you know exactly what I want you to do with mixing. It's just
a marriage of radio.
It really was. And so our marriage is ending, I feel like. But anyway, I know that you're going to go on to really great things. And I just, you know, wanted to bring you on just because, you know, it's been so great to work with you and tell you how wonderful it's been to work with you. And I wonder, what are your memorable moments? Has it been 19 years? I think I'm just guessing here because the years sort of roll by
1998.
Now. Yeah. It's been a long time.
I'm just, for me, I'm very basic. I'm just really pleased when I can manage to play the right clip at the right time. And when the mics are on and the levels are correct, it's just, I'm all technical, you know.
And nobody's talking underneath the music while you're trying to mix, you know. You get people going, oh gosh, I did so terribly right now, you know, like we've done before in the past, right? It was a learning process, wasn't
it? Oh, definitely, yeah.
And KBOO presented that opportunity for you to be, did you ever think you'd be an engineer?
No. I've just been doing it so long. It's
just secondhand now.
Yeah, sort of.
Well, what do you, you know, is there any moment that stands out, like that was really difficult for you to mix?
I don't know. I've kind of repressed all those bad memories from the early times when I was just learning and I'd be so embarrassed of all my mistakes and, you know.
And you used to hate
reading
on the air,
oh,
too.
Oh, I know. Going
so
on mic,
now.
I hated that. I still am not comfortable, as you can tell. I'm not all that comfortable. But.
Well, what are you going to miss?
Well, definitely I'm going to miss the challenge of doing live radio. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing quite like it. And also, I'm going to miss meeting and working with so many interesting people at KBOO.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
That just people come through here and it's just such a community of for me, a community of artists come through here,
yes.
But just a big community that come through mm-hmm. KBOO. Well, it's been wonderful to work with you. And, you know, I just want to say thank you for your dedication and your ability to perform improv on the spot. It's like, here, Janet, here's your script. Here's the cuts. Let's do it.
Let's mix it.
Let's make it. Let's make some great radio.
It's been my pleasure, D-May.
Well, thank you. And I'm going to miss you so much.
Wow,
but I know
you'll
be listening.
And thank you for teaching me so much along the way. You really have. Don't laugh. It's true. I've learned lots from you.
Well, thank you. I don't
you're
mind
the professional radio person.
Being
I'm
a
just
radio
the amateur.
Ah, well, not anymore, babe. Not anymore. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, hon. It's been great working
thank
with you.
Thank you, D-May.
That's it for the final Stage and Studio of 2016. Our engineer was the fabulous, fantastic, spectacular Janet Anderson. If you missed any of the show, visit stageandstudio.org or kboo.fm/stageandstudio. And you can also download shows at iTunes and like me on facebook.com/stageandstudio or tweet me at stage, the letter N, studio. Till 2017, I am D-May Roberts, and we're going to go out with Justine Davis singing from Imago's La Belle.
The trees have parted suddenly, blossoms fill the air, a frozen palace shimmering with riches beyond compare. There's something cold draws me ever near. What sort of